It's extra time.
He shoots, and it's a goal!
Hello and welcome back to Extra Time. I'm Patrick Van Straten, and today I'm joined by Mike Atkins. Hello, Mike.
Good morning, Patrick.
Hi, good morning. And Zach Jelleb, how are you?
I'm good, my friend. I'm good. Yourself?
Yeah, I'm not bad. I was saying before, on our first take, that this is now the beardiest podcast we've ever had.
Yeah, there's a lot of hair right now.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I mean, Zach's hair is out of control.
Yeah, there is never a better time for you, Zach, to cut it all off.
I'd give anything to go to a barber. If I was to do that, which I would never do, I probably should have done it at the beginning of lockdown. But I keep asking the boys that I live with to cut my hair, and they're refusing to because they say that I'll get annoyed with whatever they do. And they're probably right. They're probably right, to be honest. But I've now just got to the point of just like, I wake up and look in the mirror and just go, ah, it is what it is now.
I think the biggest issue there is trusting Sonny with a pair of scissors.
Yeah, don't let Sonny do it.
It would have been Kieran, to be honest. But
looking back on it, we all should have done it week one of lockdown. Like week one of lockdown, we all should have just like shaved our heads and it would have been fine by now.
Yeah.
But we all put it off and didn't realise it was going to be like 3 months.
Yeah, I mean, I was due a haircut before this all started. And here I am 2 months in looking like I'm 17 again.
I've seen you now at every stage of beardiness as well, but like Emma did my hair, and both times I've been like really grumpy and like had to go off like after everything she does, like check in the mirror, come back, give her more specific instructions. It's been rubbish for her. Like she's hated every minute of it, but I thought it'd be kind of fun to cut someone's hair.
I don't want the pressure.
Yeah, I would like to do it. I've offered to the boys to do it, and again, they say no. So
shows the level
of trust they have on me.
Well, I understand that. Well, anyway, seeing as we are all bearded for today, let's get into some quote-unquote hipster football with the return of the Bundesliga. We're going to do a little news roundup today. So we're going to talk about the return of the Bundesliga and some spicy transfer rumours, and then a little bit of anything but football at the end if we have time. So Bundesliga football could return as early as mid-May after German Chancellor Angela Merkel confirms that plans to bring it back can go ahead. Now, obviously, all the games will be played behind closed doors. There are 9 rounds of fixtures left. And this comes a couple of days after clubs in the top 2 German divisions tested all their players. From 1,724 coronavirus tests, there were 10 positive results, which isn't too many. That seems pretty manageable. And really, this is because the German Football Federation has said that if they couldn't get football back by June, a lot of clubs would be in danger of folding just because they don't have the money coming in. Players have been training for the last few weeks, so it looks like we could actually be getting back to not normal, but some semblance of it very, very soon. Now, obviously, there are questions about how this is going to go, but really, I want us to talk about the football itself because things are finally poised, aren't they, Zach? How do you see the rest of the season going?
Well, if there's ever a title in the Bundesliga that's been quite close, it's this season. Bayern Munich are currently top by 4 points, Borussia Dortmund in second. And then Red Bull Leipzig are in third by 1 point behind Dortmund. It's going to be interesting. I think more than ever, the Bundesliga has been so exciting this season with the successes that they've had in the Champions League with Bayern Munich smashing Chelsea, Dortmund doing very well against PSG and just falling out in the last stages. And so there's a lot of attraction, and the names in the Bundesliga as well now, they're worldwide known. Jadon Sancho, Erling Haaland. I mean, just look at the Bayern Munich team and it's ridiculous. So out of all the leagues to come back, this is a pretty good one to start with. And it's kind of, they can take it in their stride and kind of grow the league even more with all these eyeballs that are about to watch them. But in my opinion, it's going to be a Bayern Munich win. Any time that Bayern Munich are basically 4 or 3 points ahead, they're going to win. However, the one thing I will say is you just don't know how any team is going to react during these times. Like, they've just had 2 months, 3 months off, and now they're just kind of come straight back. Obviously, they have been training, but there's only having such a quick break and then coming back. It's going to be different for them, and having no fans in the stadiums, it's going to be different. So I don't know, I'm just excited to see football again, to be quite honest.
Yeah, me too. It'd be nice to have something to talk about other than just like nonsense from the past. I've heard more conversations about Scholes, Gerrard and Lampard in the last 2 months than I did when they were actually all playing football. It's ridiculous. So, Mike, Zach's obviously going for the Bayern Munich coronation that we see every year. But are there any stumbling blocks for them over the last few weeks of the season that you could see?
I mean, they've got two big games in the last... So how many games they got left? There's 9 games left in the season.
9 games left.
And they've got both Dortmund and Bayer Leverkusen to play. Dortmund, obviously, second and their main title challengers. But Leverkusen have been slept on a little bit. Because everyone obviously talks about Bayern, Dortmund, Leipzig, and how Gladbach had such a fiery start to the season. Leverkusen are only 2 points off Gladbach. And Gladbach are only 6 points off the top. So people are sleeping on them a little bit. And I remember one of the last games I remember watching before... you know, this all started, was the Leverkusen-Dortmund game in Leverkusen. Yeah. I think that they won 4-3. And it was one of the best games of football I've watched in a very, very long time. And it's such an exciting young team with the likes of Leon Bailey in it. I remember in that game, especially, I think it was, I never know which one it is, Sven Bender, might be his brother.
Might be Lars,
because they both play in like the same position as well. But whichever one it was, like at the holding base in midfield, was like absolutely running the show from that defensive position, sort of making more tackles, more interceptions, running further than anybody else on the pitch. When seasons start normally, you always look at who starts the quickest. This is almost like a mini season in a way. So whoever comes out the blocks the quickest and can start putting pressure on the others the quickest, they might have a chance of sneaking home. Obviously, Bayern Munich have that 4-point advantage, but if they draw and Dortmund win, then all of a sudden there's a lot of pressure on Bayern Munich the next game.
Yeah, the slightly sad thing is that Bayern are 4 points ahead. Like, if they were 3 ahead, then we'd be looking at it and saying one slip up and it's possible. Whereas because they've got to slip up twice, it feels a little bit more remote, the possibility. But you're totally right. I mean, 8 points between fifth and first... pretty much anyone in there can be a spoiler. And over the last few years, Bayern have actually had a pretty poor record away at Leverkusen. So yeah, like you said, obviously Dortmund host Bayern, then Leverkusen host Bayern. These are some of the key fixtures. And then Dortmund visit Leipzig, which could be a really, really exciting one. So I really don't know what to expect. You know, I was quite bullish on Leipzig at the beginning of the season, but Dortmund were coming into form at just the right time. And looking at the table, Bayern have the best attack in the league, followed by Dortmund, followed by Leipzig. But Bayern also have the joint best defence with Leipzig. And it feels like that combination is just going to be almost impossible to get past. Zach, who do you think are going to be the key players for Dortmund, Leipzig and Bayern over this last kind of, mini season, like Mike was saying?
So, apart from Robert Lewandowski, they've also got Hernandez and Süle coming back from injuries, which is a massive plus for them, considering how old Boateng is getting now. However, he's not been too bad when he's been filling in. The only other injuries they still have is Tolisso is out and Felipe Coutinho is out. But they're said to be reported to come back at the end of May, so they should hopefully be okay. So I think in terms of Bayern Munich's issue, they should be absolutely fine. And in terms of everyone else, like Borussia Dortmund, their key players are, as we all know, Jadon Sancho, who year on year is getting better and better and better, and Erling Haaland, who's absolutely ripped up the league since he's joined. And as for Red Bull, it's obviously Timo Werner. If these guys carry on the form that they did before we went into lockdown, then to be quite frank, then the games are going to be very interesting. When I watched the games beforehand in the Bundesliga, it was so end-to-end. It felt like no one really was defending and they just kind of got lucky with what happened. And it was like, okay, you can have a shot, we'll have a shot, and whoever scores first basically wins the game. I'm excited. It's going to be such a fun time to watch football again. I can't wait.
Yeah, me too. I mean, my one concern, I guess, for some of those players might be that because Sancho and Timo Werner have been linked with moves away and there's been no football, I feel like there's been so much talk about who's going to move where in the summer. And you wonder whether people might be a little bit unsettled maybe going into these last few games.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I think it's really nicely poised. So Mike, what are your predictions? 1, 2, 3 for the end of the Bundesliga season?
I hate to say it, but I can't see past Bayern Munich for number one, especially with that 4-point lead at the moment. Yeah. But I wouldn't sleep on Leipzig. I've just got up Leipzig's fixture list for the rest of the season. And other than Dortmund, the only other team of note they're really playing is Hoffenheim. The rest of the teams are teams like Mainz, Paderborn, Dusseldorf, Augsburg, sort of teams sort of battling relegation towards the bottom of the table. So I think if Leipzig can... Leipzig's first three games, Mainz, Hertha Berlin, and then FC Cologne. If they can get three wins from three there, which fans would probably expect them to, you could imagine them then going on a run and putting the pressure not only on Dortmund one place ahead of them, but also on Bayern Munich if Bayern Munich slip up. So I can't, honestly, I can't see past Bayern Munich, but I would probably put Leipzig ahead of Dortmund into that second spot.
Though if there was one season where it was going to happen, it could probably be this season.
Okay, like, there's just so many unknowns.
I'm going to say Dortmund will beat Bayern Munich. And then Dortmund will probably do the most Dortmund thing and lose to Leipzig, so Bayern Munich win the league.
Okay. So what, you're going Bayern and then what?
I'm going to go Bayern, Dortmund. I'm just going to leave that how it is, to be honest. That's how I think it'll end. Bayern, Dortmund, Red Bull, and then Borussia Mönchengladbach.
I reckon we'll end the season by saying this could have been Leipzig's year, but it wasn't.
Yeah, I think that's probably
true.
We said that the first year
they were in the Bundesliga.
We did.
When they came second. We said that. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
I think I'm going to agree with Mike, though. I think I'm going to put Leipzig in second just because of the difficulty of Dortmund's schedule. But should be an interesting end to the season. And we're actually going to stay in the Bundesliga for our second topic today. Now, obviously, we've seen a lot of rumours recently about Leroy Sané's mooted move to Bayern Munich. And there were rumours that it was hoped a deal could be done for about 40 mil this summer. But the BBC are now reporting that Man City are willing to let Leroy Sané go into the last year of his contract, risking losing him on a free in 2021, rather than letting him leave at a cut price fee this summer. Pep Guardiola still considers him key at the Etihad. He's only 24. And while they know that they're not going to be able to get 100 mil plus, which is what they'd originally wanted for him, they're not going to let him go for 40 million either. So he's obviously been out with this knee ligament injury since last August, I think, but he's apparently nearing full fitness. And so if the Premier League resumes in June, he might be ready to come back. So what do we think that City can expect to get realistically, Mike? Like, what do you think Sané was worth before this year? And after this year of injury and the market resetting with coronavirus, what do you think Man City can realistically hope for?
Well, this time last year, wasn't it a case of Bayern were offering close to 100, but City were holding out for closer to 150? So I think it would be a push to say that right now his value's dropped by two-thirds. But I wrote the transfer talk script yesterday and with this Sané story in it, and you know, sources behind the scenes at Bayern, or however they're meant to say it, say that they'll consider it a success if they can get Sané for less than 60.
Yeah, I mean, definitely.
So, I mean, it's negotiations, isn't it? They've gone in with their £35 million bid as a trying to force City tanks. Obviously, City not winning the league this year, might not be in Europe next year, depending on how the fallout of that continues, if they take it to court or whatever. He's been out for a year. The market's just completely gone because the clubs are running out of money. So it's hard to say, but for City, it's a case of, is he, for one more season, is Sané worth, is it worth getting rid of him for 40, 50 million, or is it worth having him for that 1 year? I mean, sort of doing the research yesterday, I saw that in his previous two seasons, those 17, 18 and 18, 19, only him and Raheem Sterling contributed at least 10 goals and 10 assists in both seasons.
Yeah.
And you forget he's only 24. Like, I thought he was, older than 24, sort of 25, 26, but he's only 24. He's still, if you're looking at a normal career arc, he's not even at his prime yet. So I think 35 million would be an absolute bargain, considering City paid 45 million for him when he was 20.
Yeah,
I think it's really hard to look at how the transfer window is going to happen. Like, it's going to be arguably the weirdest transfer window we ever have in football history.
We don't even know when the transfer window is going to be.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, exactly. And I think with the way how clubs are at the moment, financially, really not in a good way, that it kind of means two things, that clubs are either going to sell a lot of players to bring in money, or they're going to sell no one because they don't want to lose any of the good players that they do have, and they can't afford to bring any new people in. So it's a weird world that we're kind of talking that Leroy Sané might move to Bayern Munich for less than £40 million. Considering, yeah, as we said, we were talking about 100 million only a couple of months ago, and I understand his contract situation does basically mean that it's in Bayern Munich's favour. However, still, I think if you're City, you know that you've got it would be very frustrating to know that you've got a 100 million pound player and selling him for less than half of that, even if his contract is very low. Now, the only other thing as well from a Bayern Munich point of view is he's missed a lot of football this year. And that's the injury that he has got. I don't know how well he has recovered from it. But cruciate ligament rupture is a serious injury. And you do have to kind of take that into thought. Like, if you're about to spend, you know, £40 million on a player, which for Leroy Sané really isn't that much, is that injury worth it? They've seen what it's been like dealing with Koeman, when he gets an injury every other week at the rate, and the other injuries that they've had at Bayern Munich this season. However, £35 million for Leroy Sané, if they can pull that off, is arguably probably one of the best deals that's ever been done in football. It's ridiculous.
The only thing is, I'd say that if he's available for sub 60, why would everyone give Bayern Munich a clean run at him? You know, like if he's available for that money, like, yes, Real Madrid are pretty well stocked in those areas and they're probably the team that you'd expect to go for him, but surely other teams would go and at least make an offer. And that way City can, you know, bid Bayern up a little bit, unless he just says the only place I want to go is Bayern.
Yeah, I think that's what he said, that Bayern is literally, he wants to go back to Germany, and Bayern is the only club in Germany that could realistically afford to pay him what he wants.
But surely as well, like Riyad Mahrez, look, he's not old, he's not in his 30s yet, but he's not far from his 30s. Okay, the only other person that he's battling realistically is Raheem Sterling. In my opinion, personally, Raheem Sterling may be playing more of a striking role next season if, say, whatever happens to Aguero does happen. That means there's positions there for him to get. And it's not like, as well, that he was battling hard week in, week out and not really getting in the side. He was getting in the side before his injury. He just got injured, and that's why he's not played. I personally think once he's back and he's fully fit, Pep Guardiola is going to play him. Why wouldn't you play him? He's fantastic.
The only concern there, though, is that if they're not in the Champions League next season, there are fewer minutes to go round. Like, he got like 1,800 league minutes the season before this one. He got like 2,500 season before that. That's very good. But if Pep doesn't have to rotate for the Champions League, are there going to be as many minutes in top competition as Sané, Mahrez, Sterling, Bernardo Silva, Phil Foden, De Bruyne, Gabriel Jesus, potentially Aguero, all those guys want?
But then also think if they're not in the Champions League, then I feel other players are going to leave as well. So it depends. We've had that talk on the podcast before about that situation with City in the Champions League. It's definitely something that I guess Leroy will be kind of wanting to find out. Before you make your decision, is what are we going to be playing in the Champions League next season, whenever that season is. And also, I guess, wages too. Like, are Bayern Munich really going to be paying the exact same wages he's getting at Man City?
You wouldn't expect him to, but at the same time, is there, when he's on, I mean, I don't know, I have no idea what his wages are. You'd expect close to, if not, 150, 200.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not exactly out of Bayern Munich's ballpark, and you would almost think he would take a little bit of a cut to go back to Germany to
he's
be at home.
I guess growing up in Germany, I mean, the number one club that you probably want to play for is Bayern Munich, I suppose. And when you've got this opportunity like this, then it's probably pretty hard to turn down.
Yeah, well, on this topic, let's move on to another transfer, which might be kind of hard for the player to turn down, which is Jorginho to Juventus. Now, reports today suggest that while the interest has been going on for a while, Juve are now in talks to bring Jorginho back to Italy. Suggestion is that he cost about 40 million euros, which is obviously less than Chelsea paid, but he turns 29 in December. The market is obviously going to shrink a little bit. And with the emergence of your boy, Billy Gilmore, Zach, Chelsea could potentially be willing to sell. So do we think this makes sense? Is there space for him at Juventus? And would Chelsea be willing? Zach, I'm going to start with you. Do you think Chelsea would be willing to sell him?
Personally, no. Like, okay. Billy Gilmore is a very talented footballer. He's very, very good. However, he's just 18. Like, I think we need to all be a bit careful with maybe hyping it up too much. Because we do that a lot in football, is where we give these players so much pressure to perform and then it doesn't quite go their way. And he is very good. And we've seen it. We saw it against Liverpool, how talented he is. However, he's also learnt a lot from someone like Jorginho. Like, I don't know if you've seen the kind of leadership that Jorginho has shown. And even in interviews, Gilmore has said that Jorginho has basically helped him with his game and understanding where to be, etc., and like what kind of passes to make and things like that. Now, personally as well, like, Jorginho, apart from maybe Gilmore, there isn't really anyone else in Chelsea squad that kind of can kind of do what he does. And with the way that the squad's kind of been built over the 2 years, he is a very important factor, in my own opinion. And I just don't feel like Chelsea will want to kind of... I feel like if they sell him now, it'll be kind of like admitting that they got it wrong. I don't feel like they would do that. And I also think he's been fine this season. Like, he's been better than he was last season. And I don't think, unless they are paying a lot more than 40 million, there's no real point in selling him. Like, Frank Lampard really likes him. He fits his team. And he's kind of become quite an important leader in that dressing room. And I don't really know if getting that 40 million is worth it. Now, for Juventus, I think it does make sense. Maurizio Sarri is there. Wherever Maurizio Sarri is, he wants Jorginho to be there to kind of boss his midfield. And I'm pretty sure a return to Italy would be quite nice. I mean, there were reports last season that he was thinking about it. He was a bit homesick. But I feel like if you're selling Jorginho because you've got Gilmore, who is very good, I do think it's a risk because he is still so young. He's definitely going to get minutes, as we've seen just before the end of the season against Everton. He was fantastic. And he'll probably play once Chelsea eventually, if we do, but once we play again in the Premier League, because Jorginho is still out on a suspension. So although I can definitely see a future without him, I personally wouldn't want us to do it.
Okay. What about Juventus' side of the deal, Mike? Do you think there's space for him at Juve, or do you think they'd need to move anyone on in the midfield?
I mean, I was just having to think about that, because they sold Emre Can in January to Dortmund, and Can was like their seventh choice central midfielder. bear in mind, they usually play three in midfield. So would Jorginho come in and get ahead of... I mean, there's already talk about Aaron Ramsey potentially leaving Juventus. Mm-hmm. Rabiot's not really hit the ground as they were expecting him to. Khedira's, you know, on and off the treatment table. So I would say that there's definitely a space for him there, but it's a case of, are Juventus willing to pay whatever Chelsea are asking for, which, I mean, the rumours being 40 million, I would see it being more than that, considering how important he appears to be to Chelsea this season, as Zach was saying. But then it's Sarri, isn't it? I think Sarri's like the X factor in all this. If Sarri really wants him, and Jorginho has that much respect for Sarri, as you'd expect he would following him from Napoli to Chelsea in the first place, I feel like he could force the move.
A lot of people have said that, like, they've got this really strong relationship, which I do believe they definitely do. But there have been a lot of interviews this year with Jorginho where he was like, I'm not a dog. Like, I don't just follow Sarri around. Like, I make my own opinions, and I'm loving living in London and playing football for Chelsea this season. And so I personally think that link between them isn't as strong as it was, say, at like Napoli, when he did literally move clubs to join him at Chelsea. But personally, I don't think he'll quite do the same. If the money is more than we paid for and Chelsea do accept it, he'll probably definitely start thinking about it then. Because if Chelsea then say, look, we've accepted this bid, we don't know, it's up to you if you want to leave. That kind of says to you that, okay, Chelsea don't
How much
really
did he cost you?
Think that they need me. 55 million?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, because in my opinion, if a club accepts a bid, then that club is accepting that we can do without you. And so that would then play on your mind and say, okay, if it's then Juventus coming for me, arguably a league title, challenging, hopefully to go far in the Champions League, playing with Cristiano Ronaldo, Dybala, all these great players, then maybe, yeah, you go, okay, then I'm going to go there, get some a couple of medals and for the end part of my career. As you said, he is 29. But I don't think we'll be accepting anything less than what we paid for him. I think it would be a weird move, even during this kind of climate. Like, Chelsea don't have to sell.
Yeah, agreed. And the midfield's been a little bit thin this year with N'Golo Kante being kind of in and out. So I'm not sure I see this happening either. But I think Jorginho can maybe... I think he could probably wait another couple of years and then make this move if he still wants to, and probably have a nice kind of career wind down in Italy.
Yeah, it's not like he's relied on his pace ever in his career.
Exactly. Yeah, so we've got a last couple of things. Firstly, this week it emerged that Jurgen Klopp almost became manager of the Mexican national team back in 2015. Now, according to Guillermo Cantu, who was the former director of national teams for the Mexican Football Federation, he approached Klopp through a third party after he'd left Dortmund, but was told... Klopp apparently sent him a nice text message where he said, "Thanks, but no thanks. I'm planning to move to England. I've still got plenty to accomplish in the club game." So there's not a huge amount to talk about on that particular thing, but it did get me thinking, what's our dream combination of manager and international team? Because we generally assume that managers are only going to coach the national team of the country they're from. But I think stylistically, it might be interesting to see a different combination. I think Klopp with Mexico would have been absolutely amazing. And similarly, I was thinking about this and I thought, I would love to see Guardiola manage the Netherlands. Like, that to me feels like a natural match. Like, the way that the Netherlands think of themselves as playing football and the way Guardiola was educated, like, kind of under Cruyff, it makes me think that would be an interesting combination. But what do you guys think? Yeah. Mike, do you have any suggestions for a manager and a team?
I don't have any sort of realistic, well, not realistic, but sort of ones that you could put together like Guardiola with the Netherlands. But I was just thinking of how stylistically different could you get a national team from a manager? Could you put Sam Allardyce in charge of Brazil? Could you put Tony Pulis in charge of... In fact, how about something like Sam Allardyce in charge of sort of the mid-noughties Italy or something like that?
That'd be great.
Where the two styles, they're different, but they overlap enough that you could see something maybe working.
Yeah, like, I could definitely see that working.
We've said for ages, Jose Mourinho needs to go into an international job. And there's none better than either Portugal or Italy. If Jose Mourinho took over that Italy side, imagine what would happen. Even the Portugal job, yeah.
Whenever he wants to take that Portugal job, that Portugal job's going to be his. There's no doubt about it. Because the Portugal manager's ancient as well. So I feel like he's been there. Is it Fernando Santos? Is that who's... Or I just made that name.
Is it still him? Jesus. But when they won Euro 2016, they won it playing a very defensive style of football. Mm. And so you could absolutely see Mourinho fitting in. I mean, similarly, you mentioned Pulis. I could see Pulis like taking over. Like, he just want the tallest country he could get on his hands. So I feel like Pulis and like Norway. Yes. Can you imagine Haaland, Josh King? I mean, Odegaard's not tall. But everybody else in that side, just like a bunch of 6'5" players. It'd be great.
Jeez. I mean, Pep will say, I would like to see, just because of what he said, that he would like to eventually manage Brazil.
That'd be mental, wasn't it, in his book,
that Pep Guardiola wants to manage Brazil. That's what he wants his final thing to be. That would be interesting. I mean, yeah, I think we've also, like, Wenger. I would like to see Wenger come back. I don't think he will now because he's got a job at FIFA.
Yeah.
So that kind of screams that he's kind of done with the managing side of football. But why not say... I'm just trying to think of who else there is. Like, has Ancelotti ever done internationals?
No, don't think so.
Ancelotti would be a pretty... With anyone. He could just take on England after Southgate.
Yeah. Ancelotti would actually be a great England manager, you know.
Yeah, I think there was talk of it sort of briefly when he was at Chelsea or just been sacked from Chelsea, that people were sort of throwing him like, would you take this job? Would you take that job? And the England job was one of the ones that somebody mentioned, and he I mean, it might have just been Ancelotti being Ancelotti and, you know, not saying no, but he certainly seemed like, well, if the opportunity came up and it felt like it was right, then sure, I would manage England.
God, I would love to see that. That would be actually amazing. I'm genuinely, if I were a great coach like Pochettino or Klopp, I wouldn't do it now, but I would definitely think like, okay, 15, 20 years time, I would love to manage a country that's never had a decent run in an international tournament, kind of like Mexico, but has loads of talent. Mexico, Nigeria, I think it would be super fun. Senegal, it'd be super fun to take over a country like that and be like, you know what, they've got loads of exciting players, but for some reason they've never quite made the leap. Maybe just a top class manager going in there and taking over would really like energize them, and they'd finally be able to kind of break through, which their talent suggests they should be able to. I mean, you look at nations like Mali, which have not historically been like big footballing nations, or Guinea, and now you're starting to see so much talent coming through in those places.
Yeah, I think I just had a suggestion as well. I mean, you mentioning Pochettino brought it to mind, but potentially Pochettino of Venezuela. I mean, because there's obviously there's that South American link as it is anyway, and South American managers tend to manage other South American nations like Bielsa did with Chile. But Venezuela are just sort of coming into I know it's niche, but they're sort of coming into this almost golden generation where they lost to England in the under-17s World Cup final a few years ago. And then if you look at the players coming through now, you've obviously got like Joseph Martinez, who's he's done his ACL, but he's been tearing up the MLS the last couple of years. You've got Peñaranda, who's sort of featuring in bits at Watford. They're certainly, and their goalkeeper, I think he's Venezuelan, Walker Farines is one of the best young keepers I've seen in a very long time. So there's the talents there at Venezuela to sort of take the next step. And maybe they need a big name manager like a Pochettino.
I feel like if you're of that level as a manager, then I just think, I feel like you want to be managing club football just so because it's so constant all the time and not stop start where it is with say international football, and for someone like Poch, or Klopp, any of these guys, international football's just got to be the one that's like at the end of your career on what you're thinking, because you just want to be in it all the time. Being an international manager just kind of feels like, all right, I'm done now. After that, like my aim is to win an international competition. But then after that, I can't, like, once you've done that, do you really ever go back to club football? Like, yes, Bielsa has done it, but Bielsa is a nutcase. Whereas a lot of other managers in my
Conte's done it.
Yeah, that is true.
And you could argue Deschamps at his peak at the moment, or what would be considered a managerial peak, and he's managing the France team.
I know what you mean, but I also think like managers are starting managing younger than they used to, and I think like if you start managing in your late 30s, by the time you're in your late 50s, you've had 20 years of getting from fans, like working 7 days a week, like you've been paid really well, but you probably haven't seen your family, and that's a period of time where you've probably missed your children grow up, you've dragged your family around the world, you've been sacked a bunch of times, even if you've been good. I don't know, there's a part of me that thinks like a managerial career where you think 20 years in, really hard work, and then I do like international management and retire like that. I don't think we're that far away from coaches kind of getting to that point. Like, yes, Pochettino's still young, but I think like mid-50s, like you think, I've had enough.
Yeah, again, Pep has literally said that he doesn't want to be managing into his like 60s and 70s. He wants to do it and then kind of retire. Which is fair enough, and I guess, you know, being a manager must be insanely stressful. Must be more stressful than being a player. Must be arguably one of the most stressful jobs in football. I can understand it. I can definitely understand it. But I mean, I just feel like we'll be cheated out of their best years if they go to international management right now.
Yeah, I understand what you mean, but
the World Cup, the World Cup's still the pinnacle. You know, if managers want to win the best trophy in football, they've got to manage an international team to do that.
And especially if you're a coach who, you know, you've got past the point where you're going to get a club that can realistically win a title or Champions League. Like, I'm not saying, I obviously think Pochettino is going to get another big job, but you look at Allegri. Allegri's been out of the game for a little while now. And if I were Allegri and say the clubs that were coming in for me in the future were teams like Spurs, I would probably think, would I rather go to Spurs and you know, maybe finish second or third in a really good year? Or would I rather take over Italy and have a genuinely good shot at winning a World Cup or winning a European Championship? I think to me, it would be much more tempting to do the latter.
It would be arguably, weirdly, a little bit more rewarding. Like, in club football, you can buy players. Whereas international-wise, you literally can't do anything but take the players that are kind of given to you. That makes sense. So everything that you do is kind of more kind of like, you can't just have, say, a Lionel Messi or an Eden Hazard and let them kind of win the game for you at times. Everything is down to kind of your management and how you play it. That's not to say anyone during club football with those managers.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, did you see that clip of what was it? Luis Enrique? It was, I can't remember who it is, but it's a clip of Jordi Alba crying. Looks very emotional at half time, and you can hear the Barcelona team talk, and it literally is just give the ball to Messi, just give the ball to Messi, and that's it.
But that's fair if you've got Messi.
Yeah, this is how the Argentina managers have been doing it for however long.
Yeah, now Argentina are finally getting good again for the first time in a while. Okay, guys. Well, we're going to finish with one last question. Anything but football. This came in from @LukaPavlovi7. And he asked, one country that you would love to visit, so one you haven't visited yet, but you'd love to visit, and one country you would never, ever want to visit. Mike, let's come to you first. What do you think?
Well, this question kind of hurts me because I'm meant to be sort of gearing up for a holiday away to Greece in a couple of weeks.
Oh,
I'm meant to be spending a week on Mykonos, so I was really looking forward to that. So that was meant to be... I still obviously still want to love to visit there, but I feel like further afield, I just want to go everywhere. Like, I want to try some of the Pacific Islands. I want to go to the places like Fiji or sort of New Caledonia or somewhere like that. That's just like completely in the middle of nowhere and stay in one of those houses on the water, you know, those sort of hotel suite things, things like that. That's sort of proper exotic in the middle of nowhere.
Honeymoon kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know those pictures on honeymoons,
Yeah, just somewhere completely out there, like literally other side of the world, as far away from civilization as you can get. That would be one place I'd absolutely love to go.
Do you have a country you wouldn't want to go to?
Where are our listeners from? Where are our viewers from? Is there anyone that I don't want to offend?
Who cares, man? Just do it.
I feel like, to me, Mexico's always been a little bit overhyped.
Really?
Yeah.
I love Mexico.
It's one of those things where I feel like I would still want to go. I still want to go, but it's, I don't know. It just seems, I can't even phrase how I think it's sort of portrayed, but it just seems far too, this is one of the things that I want to visit and see the culture, but if I don't go there, I don't think I'd be too upset.
Fair. It's much more unstable now than it used to be. Like, I went in 2002 and it was like Mexico City was like safe, and we went to a place called Taxco, which is like pretty much a hill, like built on kind of silver mines in the middle of nowhere, and Taxco, Acapulco, like a lot of those places are not as safe now as they were back then, which is a little bit sad. Those things tend to be a bit cyclical. I mean, you can make the same point about London, I guess, but I understand what you mean. Zach, do you have a country you want to visit and one you would never want to visit?
I've always wanted to go to Cuba before. Cuba would be quite interesting. I really want to go to Indonesia eventually. I really want to go traveling. Like, I think everyone does. So I can't really say something like that. But yeah, one of those two would definitely be like a dream place to go. And then I just typed in 10 countries you don't want to visit, and Algeria is on there, which is sad, to be honest. It's actually a beautiful country. I'd probably say the one country I don't want to go to is maybe like North Korea.
See, I was thinking that somewhere like North Korea just intrigues me so much. Like,
yeah, but just like you'd be watched all the time.
One of my friends lives in China and he goes there like several times a year, and now he runs like tour groups there.
He loves it. So intrigued, like, because it's so shut down and no one knows anything. And sure, if an outsider, a foreigner goes in, they'll be shown the absolute best of North Korea, and you won't see
exactly,
any of the
and I don't think,
bad
I don't
bits.
Want,
but it's still,
like, if I was,
it still intrigues me to want to go there and just see what it actually looks like, considering we see so little of it outside of North Korea. Like, we didn't even know if their leader was dead for about 3 weeks.
Yeah, that was a fun period of time, wasn't it?
And that turned out, apparently he was just testing to see who was his closest people in his group.
What, like Colleen Rooney? He was pulling a Colleen Rooney. That's really baller.
Oh, God.
I think I'd probably say country I want to visit. I think I'd probably go New Zealand.
Fair.
I'd love to go to New Zealand. But it's a very long list, to be honest. And country I wouldn't want to visit, well, technically, it's a city-state within a country. But I'm not interested in the UAE. I'm not interested in Dubai at all.
Fair.
Because there are other countries which are, like, equally terrible. Other places that are terrible. Like, China is terrible and Russia is terrible. I mean, like, politically. But I at least think there's, like, interesting culture to see in China and in Russia. I've really come around to the idea of going to China. But in Dubai specifically, Dubai has just been built as, like, this ridiculous, like, Middle Eastern answer to Las Vegas to me. Like, it's just this, like, fantasy world that chavs love to go to because it's expensive. And so they think it's, like, quote-unquote classy.
If there's one place I could never see you being in, it's Dubai, to be quite honest.
It just pissed me off. Like, there's no culture there now because it's just, like, subsumed it in the search of, like, tourist dollars. And, like, I don't know. I just have no interest in going there and, like, hanging out with people from Essex. Like, it just seems like it's going to be, like, the only way is Essex in the Middle East. And I can't be arsed with that. So, anyway... That's my opinion. That, I mean, there are other places like Saudi and stuff, but I at least feel like Saudi probably also has interesting things in it. Like Saudi has, like, you know, like holy Muslim sites and stuff, and like that is appealing. Whereas like Dubai is just like a hole in the desert filled with like money grabbing assholes. So
and
I'm
a beach
just not
that looks
interested.
Like a palm tree.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh wow, we built a really tall building. Yeah, that's because you basically have slave labor and no principles. Like. If you don't pay people anything to build stuff, you could build loads of crazy. Anyway, sorry. Yeah, moving on. True.
Having said that, if anyone wants to send us to the World Cup in Qatar in 2022, then you know, feel free to
take it
to get in touch.
Yeah, well, let's see if that actually happens.
Well, the people that built the pyramids paid.
That's a debate because it was generally felt that the pyramids were built with slave labor, but actually, like recent archaeology has obviously suggested that it was like. Pretty highly skilled like craftsmen and artisans who were building it, but they were probably also using slave labor to like pull like you know blocks of stone and stuff, so a bit of a combo.
Okay
yeah, not great.
I would like to see the pyramids, to be fair, though. I feel like that'd be one of the things that you, though I don't know if they would quite reach your expectation. Like I feel like you'd get there and be like, yeah, I mean they're big.
Well, the problem with the pyramids is, you know, when you go to places and you sort of see them for the first time as you like turn around the corner, you can see the pyramids from miles away. So by the time you get there, the excitement of seeing them is already going to be gone.
Just like the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah, like you
no,
can just see it from so far
away.
The one thing
that would ruin it for me is, you know, like in pictures, it will be like no tourists are there. Like it looks beautiful. You get there, and there's just like a million people around it. That would ruin it for me. It would look too commercialized.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I feel like there's still going to be some appeal because, like, when you go to the Sphinx, right? If you see the Sphinx.
Yeah.
The Sphinx, by the time that, like, Alexander the Great was around, the Sphinx was about 2,000 years old. So the difference between, like, ancient Greeks, you know, like... Well, like the classical Greek period, so like Plato and Socrates and stuff.
Yeah.
The difference between them and the time when the Sphinx was built is the same as the difference between us and like the year zero. Like that's how old the Sphinx is.
Oh,
I mean, like
that is quite
when you have that in mind, you're like, that is pretty mental.
That is ridiculous.
That's really incredible. I also just finished Assassin's Creed Odyssey, which is all about the Greeks and Romans. Really good game. And if you want to learn about your history of Greeks, it's a really good way to do it. I was fighting off people with Socrates by my side.
What?
Yeah, it's sick. It's so good.
Does he poison them? Does he give them hemlock? He should do.
He's a bit weird. But you meet loads of like the Greek people. And it's sick. Good game if anyone wants it. It was like £16. Fantastic.
Great tip. An extra anything but football there from Zach. Thanks very much for joining me, you guys. And thank you very much to you listening or watching this at home. If you're watching this on YouTube, give us a like if you enjoyed the video and subscribe to the channel. Hit the notification bell to never miss an upload. And if you're listening on the podcast, thank you for continuing to support it right now. We will obviously go back to normal programming at some point and hopefully bring you some more anything but football, because I know people have been asking for it on Twitter. Thanks very much, guys, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
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 It's extra time.
He shoots, and it's a goal!